Hi, Smart Community friends. Welcome to the summer series here on the Smart Community podcast. We're taking a little break from new content over the Australian summer holidays, but with more than 200 episodes in the bank, we have plenty for you to catch up on. Now, during this summer series, we've gone back into the archives and found some really nice episodes, a great mix of episodes and ones that you've really enjoyed. And this week, we're starting right back at the beginning when we were called the Smart City Podcast. So this episode is with Nancy Odendale, who is in episode 3. Nancy is an urban planner and is an associate professor in city and regional planning at the University of Cape Town in South Africa. In this episode, not only will you hear Nancy and I discuss the cool new idea of a podcast about smart cities, we also talk about her background in urban planning and how she's been involved in the concept of smart since the 1990s, when it was called digital city. We also discuss how informality is often core to understanding a city in the global south, the difference between smart urbanism and smart cities, and the contrast between big engineering approaches to smart and the idea of smart from bottom up. Nancy and I discuss the social justice angle of technology, being used to challenge the status quo, and how tech is part of the day-to-day, even for people who are living in quite marginalized existences. Plus, Nancy tells us why she believes South Africa is the perfect place to pilot smart tech and so much more. Now, of course, this episode was recorded almost 3 years ago now, so I have a little update from Nancy. She is going well, lots of things happening. She has published a new book, and so we will put the link to that in the show notes, Shaping Smart for Better Cities. And she also says that she has secured a new book contract, which is really exciting. And this one will be on the bottom-up disruption in African cities. So that will keep her busy in 2021. Now, we will also get Nancy back onto the show in 2021 for a full update. But in the meantime, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
So, hi, Nancy. How are you going? Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Zoe. Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's a great privilege. Thank you. A smart city podcast, my God.
I went searching for a podcast on smart cities and I just couldn't find one. So I was like, well, I'll just make my own and then just start emailing people in the space and, start kind of, I'm calling it the Smart City Collective.
Lovely.
Where, it's like a hub of people with lots of information, lots of different connections in, kind of the one space. So, yeah.
What a great idea.
Thanks. So we'll dive straight in. Let's start in the past. And my first question is, can you tell us a little bit about your background and what you're passionate about?
Sure. So I'm an urban planner. I trained as an urban planner. And I sort of developed an interest in technology quite early on in my career, but largely from working on geographic information systems. And then later on, I became quite curious about how technologies enable, how they affect power dynamics between people and how they enable people to access resources and to empower themselves and how that relates to city processes. So I then became quite interested in this notion of what we used to call the digital city in the late 1990s. And the digital city was largely around how, where we still talked about digital technologies or new technologies and how that interfaces with the city in all sorts of ways. So I became interested in that, I would say, kind of early 2000s as a debate in itself, coming from a background where technology was something I always thought about. And then I ended up doing my PhD research on smart cities in South Africa. And when I started my PhD research, it was fairly, I battled getting a supervisor or some would say an advisor in different contexts. We call it supervisors for my PhD in South Africa, because the sense was that, well, you know, what's so important about technology in cities? I say that now and it just sounds ridiculous, right? But it's sort of, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer. But I remember sort of in the urban planning community, there being very little interest in the notion of the digital city or indeed the smart city. Unfortunately, I found a supervisor who wanted to work with me in Johannesburg, and I did my research in Durban, which is the third largest city in South Africa. It's also the major sort of main port city, and it's quite an industrial city still, unlike Cape Town, for example, which is where I'm based now, which is largely a kind of service sector driven economy. So I was quite curious to see how the city of Durban was embracing technology. And it turned out that they had a smart city strategy that they were working on. This is the city government, the municipality. But it was largely developmental. And what I mean by that is there was a big focus on socioeconomic development and how do technologies enable kind of, you know, the city government to improve its own sort of bureaucratic procedures and processes, but at the same time also how technology can sort of be made accessible, like internet, for example, be made accessible to a broader audience. So that kind of developmental focus was quite interesting to me. And I think it really informed the remainder of, you know, my sort of research on smart cities overall, and that is that I'm very interested in how people appropriate technologies in ways that suit their livelihoods as well as their lifestyles, and how that interfaces with, you know, how they move around the city, how they interface with city processes. So that kind of set the tone of my research, really. I did some work in Brisbane as well, actually. I had a research grant as a part of an exchange program. I was based at Griffith University for 3 weeks, and I ended up writing a paper where I compared Brisbane's kind of digital city initiatives with Durban's initiatives and trying to kind of establish what the differences were. And what I essentially found was there was the one similarity, even though the two cities are so different in such different parts of the world, is the one similarity is that smart city strategies often accorded with the city's kind of own strategic objectives, and those strategic objectives were often associated with sort of economic development strategies. So that was an important finding for me, you know, whether it was in the global south or in Australia. I never know whether Australia is part of the global south or north. I suppose geographically it's south, but, you know, socioeconomically it's up there with the global north in many ways. So that was really the work I'd done for, well, I would say probably the first half, yeah, from about 2001 to about 2008, I suppose. Yeah. And then I sort of gave it a bit of a break, and I came back to the smart city stuff, I would say probably about 4 years ago, when there was a kind of resurgence of interest in smart city debates. You know, as we kind of got to the position of sort of big data and talking about Internet of Things and so forth. So it's been an interesting journey.
Yeah, wow. So you worked on, like, I imagine back in 2001, even to 2008, the smart city space would have been, yeah, totally new and totally even like utopian kind of view of what things will look like.
It was an interesting space to work in because, I mean, what I found was that there were essentially three kind of approaches that I found that I could discern. The one was this kind of technologically determinist idea of, you know, technology is going to save us, or technology is going to You know, if you were writing from the Global South perspective, which I always have done, you know, technology is this great savior, this great panacea that will solve all sorts of socioeconomic ills. And that kind of technologically determinist perspective, you know, was something that I always took issue with and I had a problem with always, because I think what it does is it objectifies technology, and it, and I always embraced a kind of a second perspective, which was more around, you know, that, that technology and human agency kind of coexist and they inform each other, you know. So that to me is a far more interesting way of looking at it. And then, of course, there's the kind of futuristic stuff, you know, the kind of science fiction type stuff that that is amusing and probably got me interested in it in the first place, but possibly to a large extent informed by a kind of fantastical idea of what technology can do, which is not necessarily rooted in any kind of realistic way in terms of how people live and how people find their way around the city. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely, I mean, I suppose personally from a career perspective, it was for me, it was a good space to be in because, I mean, people were writing about technology in developing countries, but largely, you know, either looking at e-governance, which is something I got bored with very quickly, although I think it's a very important piece of body of work that looked at how technology could enable, well, I suppose, better governance processes. Or, you know, people were writing about technology as savior, you know, technology is this great kind of economic enabler. And there was talk about leapfrogging and, you know, and the sense that the Global South were essentially just kind of forge ahead. And I always had a bit of an issue with it. So I suppose I carved out a niche for myself where I was interested in actual cities and the shape of cities and spaces in cities and how that interfaced with technologies. And what that where that took me to essentially very quickly is to think about informality a little bit more carefully, because so many cities in the Global South you know, more so perhaps in Latin America than in many Southern African cities, or more so in West Africa than in Southern Africa. There's so much variation. But informality is quite core to understanding the city in Southeast Asia as well, you know, where a lot of livelihoods are enabled through the informal economy or people live in informal settlements. And to me, I thought there was such an interesting sort of interrogation to be had around technology and informality. So I found a lot of my work, I started looking at mobile phones and how mobile phones are used by street traders, for example. And to me, that's, yeah, and also how new spaces are created through mobile telephony and in the city, from an urban design perspective. So, yeah, I sort of carved that little niche out for myself fairly quickly. And it was probably quite a strategic thing to do academically. But recently there's been some really wonderful work that's come out of Brazil and Chile and, India, of course, on that kind of realm of work as well. And possibly there's a whole, you know, there's a whole bunch of work around Global South and technologies and other languages that I just haven't read because I can only speak English and, well, and Afrikaans, but that doesn't help anybody.
I mean, you talked a lot about what kind of sparked your interest, but I'm interested in, you know, from 2001, 2008, and then you had like the break there. What kind of drew you back to that smart city? Was there any like one thing in particular that you read or you saw or you heard someone speak, or was it just kind of felt like you were being drawn back to the smart city space?
I was actually trying to avoid getting back into the smart city space because I was a bit sick of it, to be honest. And I just felt as an academic, I wanted to do a different kind of work and also look at different infrastructures. You know, there's some really interesting work being done on water and on, you know, sanitation and so forth. So I thought, you know, let me rather do something different. But then I also, I got distracted by just other work. I was doing more sort of curricular work, and I was doing a lot of traveling around the African continent. But while I was, on sort of a different kind of project, and while I was traveling, I still found myself, I would be in Nairobi and I heard about M-Pesa, which is this electronic banking, mobile banking service that originated in Kenya. And I found myself completely fascinated by that, right? And I found myself constantly taking photos of little phone kiosks in Accra and Ghana and in Lagos in Nigeria. And I thought to myself, my God, you're still interested in this stuff. So even though I was working on something completely different, a big continental urban planning curricular project, I still found myself being drawn to how digital technologies or how new technologies are embedded in the city and how they manifest in the city, on city streets, etc. But the actual specific thing that got me back into writing about smart cities was an invitation to participate in a workshop on smart urbanism, which was organized by folks at Durham University in England, which also resulted in a great book called Smart Urbanism. And the organizers were Simon Marvin, who has had been a kind of long sort of established academic hero of mine. So to be invited by him to a workshop on smart cities, I thought, oh, yes, here's my moment, And then and his co-organizers are also just great academics, great people, Colin McFarlane and Andres Luc. And the three of them then edited this book that was published by, I think it was published by Routledge, called Smart Urbanism, in which I published a chapter. But the workshop was great because it really, the fact that they used the term smart urbanism as opposed to smart cities, I think was quite poignant because it sort of, to me, it speaks more to process rather than something that just exists outside the human experience. It speaks to, when we talk about being urban, we speak about, I suppose, to me, it conjures up this idea of just being a city dweller and moving through the city and being part of the city. So I love the idea of smart urbanism. So that's what sparked me to get involved with that again. And then I also have a sort of standing friendship with, and an academic relationship with Marcus Foth, who's, Marcus, I'm sure he's the director of Urban Informatics Lab, is it? At Queensland University of Technology. And through Marcus, I also kind of got roped into doing some writing for a book that he was editing with some others. Academia is often about relationships, right? About networks and relationships. And so I suppose I just got pulled into and was very privileged to be invited back into this space. So that's what got that going again. And then the kind of invitations continued rolling in. And also I love traveling. So if I get invited to go to a workshop on something, I'll probably go.
Yep. I'm with you on that. I love traveling. But work or play is fine.
Absolutely. I can make both work. Both can work. Yeah.
Yep. Let's talk a bit about the projects and things that you're currently kind of working on sure. In this space.
Okay. I've got some really nice stuff going on actually. With people that I've liked and admired for years. With Simon Marvin, who's based at Sheffield University. He's the, I think they call it director of the Urban Institute. We'll be working on a project looking at drones and the use of drones to kind of enable humanitarian assistance, emergency assistance, and sort of delivery of medicines, for example, in other parts of Africa. So that's about to kick off. We're having our first meeting in February, and we're doing that with a grant from the British Academy. It's a year-long project, and it's largely exploratory. We kind of want to get a sense of what this drone infrastructure means, what the implications are for enabling livelihoods, I suppose, is a good way of putting it. Another project that's kicking off this month, and will be running for the next 3 years, is with Iona Data, who's at King's University in London. She's done some amazing work on smart cities in India. And Ola Soderstrom, who's based at Neuchâtel University in Switzerland, and Diganta Das, who's in Singapore, and we'll be working on a comparative project on smart cities in India and South Africa. So we've got two peers. Yeah, I know, it's going to be fun. And in fact, Ayono and I have already done some work on this through another grant. But this particular grant is with funding from the Swiss National Research Foundation. So we want to kind of get to grips with how the smart city discourse manifests in India and how it manifests in South Africa, and then do a comparison. We're very excited about that. And then the third thing I'm working on is a book with my friend Alessandro Origi, who's at Plymouth University in Britain. And Alex has written some really great stuff on digital cities and smart cities. And he's an architect and urban designer. And with me being an urban planner, I think we often do speak the same language because we're both interested in space and the production of space. So we're working on a book together which we hope to get the proposal in by the end of this month. It's looking a bit tight right now. Where we're looking at place, you know, how do smart technologies and sort of embedded technologies, things like screens and, you know, virtual reality technologies, how do those contribute to the creation of place? And what placemaking and, you know, a kind of deeper sense of the kind of, I suppose, the cultural identity of certain places in the city. And we've already got it's an edited book that we're going to be working on together. And we've already got a couple of chapters from folks at QUT, at University of Sydney. There's a big Australian presence in the book, which is great. And then we've got some folks from Europe as well contributing. So what we're really trying to get at is, you know, how do we use technologies, or how can technologies actually enhance the sense of place of urban spaces, you know, rather than just kind of plonking something down and hoping that people will use it. You know, how can you actually enhance how you feel in a place with technology? So I'm super excited about that. And I think, I think it's going to be a nice collection of work. And then there's lots of little writing gigs, you know, just kind of bits and pieces for journals and stuff.
Yeah, cool. No, it sounds very interesting. It sounds like you've got a lot of really interesting things on your plate at the moment.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. It's really great stuff. I'm really excited about the notion of post-smart as well, which is something that's beginning to emerge. This idea that smart technologies has become such an integral part of our livelihoods that we can now start talking about post-smart, you know, which is probably where the drone project could be quite exciting to look at how these things now go a step further, and actually start altering, the way we do things quite concretely.
Yeah, I think the a technology or a device or something is has made it when it becomes boring because it's just part of our normal life.
Yeah, you know? that's a great observation.
Yeah,
yeah.
So you know, really interesting times ahead in all parts of the world. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think. Yeah, I mean, it's this notion is it Bruce Mao, I think, who wrote about, you know, the mundane, where something becomes invisible, it's mundane. I think it's a great way of thinking about post-smart, I suppose, you know, where it's such a part of our day-to-day that it's not even, it's almost decentered. And I suppose in my part of the world, we're not talking about driverless cars yet. We're not there. It's just not. We're still trying to grapple with getting effective public transport systems going. But you know, I suppose you know, if you kind of start talking about effective public transport systems, you can perhaps start having a conversation about automated sort of systems that don't require
buses.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. You know, maybe there's some leapfrogging that can take place. But to me, what's more interesting is how sort of technologies become part of the day to day in sort of people who kind of live quite marginal sort of existences, you know, people who do live in informal settlements, et cetera, how they enable the everyday. To me, that's always been far more interesting. Although it's very, very, exciting when you start thinking about the more sort of, the very, you know, the drones and driverless vehicles. I mean, it's fun, the futuristic stuff. It's fun to talk about, right? It's fun to think about.
Definitely. Well, that kind of leads on to my next question, which is what types of things is South Africa and I guess even Africa as a whole doing in that smart city kind of space?
Sure. Yeah, there's quite a mixed bag. I mean, on the one hand, there's the sort of Songdo, Dubai kind of vision of smart cities that's starting to appear on plans, right? I mean, you're starting to see these sort of fantastical master plans for smart cities in places like Nairobi and Lagos and Rwanda, Kigali, which is something I tend to be quite critical of because it bears such little resemblance to what the cities are actually like and what really goes on there. So I suppose we can term it, there's the fantasy, you know, and it's a term that was coined by my colleague, Vanessa Watson, who teaches with me here at UCT in urban planning. You know, these kind of fantasy ideas that, that don't often move beyond paper plans, you know, they're often, and the argument that Vanessa has made in a paper that she published on it was just that quite often it's just a vehicle for property speculation. You know, Africa being seen as the last frontier for those kind of large scale, sort of developments, and that smart is really just a tag. It's really just a discourse, you know, rather than, something that's like Songdo. It's Songdo in South Korea, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I went there.
That's where you went. Yeah, that's right. I remember you saying. So there's that. And it's always interesting to watch that unfold. The fascinating thing is those kind of narratives haven't really found a home in South Africa. I mean, we have other sort of fantastical ideas about cities in this country where, you know, which are often just sort of codes for gated communities. But you haven't really seen that in South Africa where you have these kind of large scale developments being proposed that are just called smart cities. So that's the one, is the kind of fantastical stuff. And then there's the sort of, I suppose, just the kind of retrofitted, sort of infrastructure-led developments that, you know, where there's been a push for installing fiber optic, for enabling smart grids, for, you know, sort of enabling kind of digital systems that would ensure more optimization of scarce resources. You know, really infrastructure-led, the stuff that's run by engineers. And that's going on, you know, and that you'll probably find embedded in big redevelopment projects or, you know, in, new developments. Yeah. I mean, you'll probably find bits of that everywhere or in parts of cities that get retrofitted with fiber optic or, and so on. So there's that going on. How much of that is going on? I'm not entirely sure, but, it would certainly be interesting to kind of do a kind of systematic scan of how much of that is going on. And then I think the other form of smart is really is the stuff that I've been writing about, and that is, you know, smart from the bottom up. And there's a couple of dimensions to that. There's smart technologies being used by people in their everyday existences and their everyday sort of movement around the city, making sense of the city, etc., communicating, and so on, and uncovering that, I think, is an entry point to understanding what contemporary urbanity actually looks like in the African context. I don't think you can have a conversation about any form of the urban without actually considering technologies. I think it's just become such an integral part of our day-to-day lives. But the other dimension of it, which I've also written about, is the social justice angle, and that is where social justice movements and community-based organizations use technologies you know, quite often, obviously, social media, to either fight a good fight, or maybe not always a good fight, but, you know, fight a fight. and you know, or sort of through some oppositional practice, you know, they're unhappy with something someone's, you know, government is doing or local government is doing, and actually using technologies to challenge the status quo. And that's always interesting, right? Those are the kind of bits and pieces that I would say tell us something about smart. And then, of course, there's again, I suppose this relates to the everyday, is just how technology manifests in space, you know, whether it's new forms of land use, like little kiosks that are provided by big mobile phone providers that kind of become quite interesting little collectives and spaces and social spaces. And, you know, I think those manifestations, I haven't come across many people who've written about that. And I think those are interesting to unpack.
Yeah, all very interesting. It seems we're all kind of doing our own little parts and things, and to suit our own kind of, you know, social, economic kind of situation, and how we use the space in all the different cities. It's really, really fascinating.
Well, I mean, I'm glad you said that, because I think, you know, a lot of the smart city discourses tend to be kind of city in a box kind of ideas, you know, sort of, oh, look, you know, if you Google smart city and you look at images, you know, you'll see these, no doubt you've seen this, but these weird images that kind of, you know, very tick boxy, that, you know, that say, well, you know, if your city has this, then you're a smart city. And, you know, it's kind of that dashboard thing of, you know, let's, you know, the standardized, I suppose the word I'm trying to get at is a kind of standardized perspective on a smart city. And what you've just said is where I agree, that actually, no, the smart city kind of gets made and remade over and over again in different contexts, and it looks different in different contexts.
Yeah, definitely. I'm really passionate about bringing that smart tech to regional areas, because although it's called smart city tech, it doesn't, like, I think the stuff that's going to happen in a big city, no matter what, you know, kind of what we do, it can be definitely shaped, but I'm really passionate about bringing that smart tech to regional areas that can, and again, yeah, it won't look the same as, you know, say Brisbane and Ipswich or Toowoomba, these smaller cities, but I think it can make a real difference to people's lives. So I guess it's, yeah, really interesting to hear about the things that, you know, different countries are doing, and you know, that it's really interesting. Mm-hmm. I think that everyone's talking about this space, and kind of talking about it as if it's a new thing, whereas, you know, we know that it's not. It's just got a new banner now that we're all waving, and which is,
yeah, you know, exactly,
it's fine by me, because you know, if it gets somewhere, you know, where we can use, like, and I think tech at the moment is, you know, at that exponential kind of rate of growth, and you know, it's yeah, really exciting. Really exciting.
I think it's exciting. And I think it's, you know, I think the fantastical stuff is exciting too, you know, even if it is just so that you can make fun of it. But I think I've always found technology exciting. I look at drones and I'm thinking, ooh, you know, I need to find out more about that. And I think there's something about the material manifestation of invention that enables us to be mobile, to communicate, which are such human qualities, you know. I mean, the wanting to move around and freedom of movement and needing to communicate with one another is such an integral part of the human condition. And to kind of come, you know, and to see these material manifestations of these inventions that enable us to do that, with so much more efficacy, I think is hugely exciting. I've always been very skeptical of this critique of, for example, social media and technology, that it turns us into asocial beings, that, you know, those critiques. I mean, I remember last time I was in Brisbane a couple of years ago, I went to this incredible exhibition on video games, for example, that kind of just looked at, you know, gaming as an idea. And I just think, I don't know, you know, yeah, sure, there's quite a big arguments to be made for a social behavior and the stuff that's available on the internet and et cetera. But there's so much that tells us that, you know, so much enables us to even be more together and create more community.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I think, I mean, there's pros and cons with everything depending on how you use it. And I think a lot of the time when it's mainstream, I don't know, for example, I don't know, electricity or something, we don't often talk about the cons of, you know, burning coal and that kind of thing in the space of, if I switch on my light, a negative effect is, you know, something else, because we just have accepted that, you know, that's what, you know, we're entitled to electricity. I mean, it's a bit like Facebook and, you know, I know myself, like I set my Facebook up so then I don't have endless hours with, you know, scrolling or whatever. And I think if you're using it properly, or not even properly, using it in the way that, you know, feels good and comfortable to you, then I agree with
absolutely.
You. I think there's a lot of negativity around there, but I think some of that negativity wouldn't even be able to be broadcast without social media. So it's very interesting when people are critiquing, you know, I don't know, Facebook on Instagram or on YouTube, or they wouldn't even be able to get an audience without these platforms. So I think, yeah. And if you use them as, And if you use them as a platform, as a tool, rather than, you know, just soul sucking or whatever, then, you know, I don't know. I totally agree. And I don't know. Maybe it's my millennial attitude, but.
Yeah, well, I'm much older than you, and I'm sure. To me, it's almost like you're objectifying technology again by doing that, by being super critical, right? It's like you endowing technology with so much power by making the argument that it leads to this kind of these you know, dysfunctional social processes. I mean, gosh, you know, if someone sort of sits in a dark room 24/7 playing video games or being on social media without being outside and actually interacting with people in an analog way, if we can put it that way, there's something to be said for the nature of those circumstances rather than just the technology, right?
Yeah, definitely. No, yeah, I really like that. It's not just the technology. It's a bit like, you know, a smart city is not the technology. It's that what it enables, I guess. And that you need an enabling environment to have a smart city. You can't just throw tech at it. And similarly, in a negative way, you can't just throw tech at somebody. All these other factors that, yeah, kind of lead to, you know, whatever people want to be doing. And also, if that technology wasn't there, you know, people are going to do what they feel like doing at the time.
They might not sit in a dark room playing video games or being on social media. They might just, you know, I don't know, sit in a dark room and kind of, I don't know, throw a tennis ball at the wall or something.
Yeah. okay. So when it comes to kind of ranking in a smart city kind of space, do you think that South Africa kind of fits in with any sort of like rank? You know, if we were talking about smart cities, would South Africa be on the list?
Probably not. I think South African smart city strategies thus far have been quite laudable in a sense that they've tried to focus on the socioeconomic developmental side. So it depends on what kind of thing you're looking for, I suppose. I think in terms of, you know, if your criteria for judging smart cities is the kind of connected, you know, our ideal notion of a smart city is a kind of connected environment, highly mobile. I'm sort of trying to combine what you and I have been saying, what we think is a smart city, with what the smart city discourse says. And I suppose if we combine those two things and derive criteria from that, we're looking at a kind of city that's hyper-connected, where infrastructure is run very efficiently, and enabled, you know, resource management is enabled through smart technologies so that you kind of have better management of resources. And of course, mobility, I think, is a key part, and connectivity. And if we use those as criteria for what we might see as the ideal smart city, I mean, that's just my definition, then I would say South Africa is not doing so great. And the really ridiculous thing is, and I'm using the word ridiculous very specifically, because South Africa has the basic infrastructure that is very good. It has the technical expertise. It's got good universities. It's, it's got a very strong engineering profession, very strong IT profession. And yet there are other parts of Africa that has better sort of, broadband connectivity than we do. And the reason for that is our telecommunications sector has been very slow to kind of reform itself. And, I'm not necessarily a big fan of deregulation, because I don't like to think of myself as being that kind of neoliberally inclined. But I do think with regards to the telecommunications sector, you need to enable some competition. And so the deregulation of the telecom sector in South Africa has been very slow, too slow, so much so that we've been overtaken by many other African countries and certainly many Latin American countries. And I think that's a great pity, because clearly the capacity is there. You know, it was really just a kind of political and institutional problem that kind of held things back. But that's beginning to change. I don't think the kind of smart city vision, you know, I don't think that kind of bold vision that drives smart cities in other parts of the world has ever really kind of taken hold in this country. Maybe it's just because we have other more pressing priorities, but then again, so do Chile, so do Brazil, you know, so do Kenya. And they've certainly got interesting kind of visions around smart cities. I think also we have a regulatory environment that is quite cautious about public sector interference in local government. So, you know, a lot of these big smart city visions are kind of driven by big IT multinational companies who see the kind of local government sector as being the kind of next frontier with regards to expanding their own markets. If you go to a city government, you know, and they have kind of, and there's a kind of need to make sense of big data and enable kind of dashboards and monitoring procedures, then, you know, obviously the private sector is best positioned, big IT companies are best positioned to do that for city governments. And South African procurement laws and procedures are actually quite stringent, you know, so it's quite difficult to, I'm really digressing. I'm so sorry. Let me just say it's a very messy regulatory environment that has inhibited innovation. That's my headline comment.
Well, I guess that kind of leads on to, I was going to ask, whether South Africa is kind of a good place, to pilot smart technology, and why or why not?
You know, I think it's the perfect place to pilot new ideas. And the reason I say that is because you have, there's good capacity, there's good skills, there are good universities. South African universities are, many academics would say this is not the case, but I would argue that South African universities are well funded, there's a knowledge infrastructure that would enable innovation. And at the same time, there's an interesting socioeconomic spectrum with regards to income that would enable, you know, ideas to be sort of tested across various socioeconomic groups. And then you've also got a very vibrant creative economy, especially in a city like Cape Town and also Johannesburg, actually. And, you know, so I think there's creativity, there's innovation, there are the skills, there's an interesting diverse market. I think it's a great place to try some new ideas. But, you know, and things are happening, but they're happening in small bites. They're small, you know, they're little kind of initiatives. Unless there's something I've missed completely, which, you know, doesn't bode well for me as a researcher.
So if, I guess the, yeah, I guess it's the same everywhere. I mean, different regulation, but you always have to get around regulation, or not get around, I want to say work with regulation, or, you know, to kind of have this, like an agile approach to regulation, which I know in Australia and Queensland, I don't think we've quite caught up with the agile approach, for regulation yet. So I know in South Korea, regulation has not really hindered them. From what I could see, I didn't delve into it too deeply. The government's really jumped on board and made, you know, for autonomous vehicles or whatever, you know, they probably wouldn't call it an agile approach, but what I would kind of, yeah, see is an agile approach. So then we can, you know, leap forward and we learn along the way, we fail, and then we try again.
I mean, regulations exist for a reason. I'm not anti-regulation, but I also worry about regulations that are just kind of that inhibit innovation. I think that's what worries me.
Yeah, definitely. So do you have any ideas about how we can better integrate across disciplines, governments, you know, industries, universities?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because if I was coming from a strictly technical, techno-determinist perspective, I would say to you, oh, technology can do that for us. Because, <You know? laughs> I mean, that is the argument that often comes up. If you look at, you know, how IT multinationals market their skills to government, and I've done interviews on this, so I've heard it firsthand. It's often, yeah, but you know, we have the skills to enable not only sort of data processing and making sense of big data, etc., but we also have the skills to enable joint up government and to enable greater communications between large kind of diversity of stakeholders, etc. So, hey, you know, the technology does it for us, but of course we know that's not the case. I mean, technology can help with it, but
it's a tool.
But I think, it's a tool. Yeah. I think, you know, my experience has always been a shared vision. I mean, if you can negotiate a shared vision, if we all want the same thing from the smart city, if we agree on what we want from it, we could probably work towards it. I don't think we'll all necessarily always agree, but if you can at least just, you know, sort of agree on a number of key principles and a shared vision, it'll probably make a big, yeah, that will probably help a lot.
Mm, yeah, no, definitely. Do you think that South Africa can become leaders in smart city technology or the smart city space?
Yeah, the actual development of technology, yeah, maybe, well, I don't know, you know, I mean, there's been some great innovations in medical technologies, for example, and there's been great innovations in, I often read about some interesting stuff. So I don't see, I mean, I think the skills are there and certainly, I mean, even if there wasn't endogenous or South African research funding to do kind of R&D, I mean, there's a lot of opportunities for working with other countries. And I think South Africa is still seen as one of those countries that often, that kind of avails itself to kind of collaborations and so on. So I think the opportunity lies in that, perhaps, is where you kind of have a collaborative arrangement, that draws on the invention and innovation that is possibly more expansive due to kind of larger, more resources, like, for example, in the US, or, well, that might change, or it's probably changing already, but, for example, in Europe and so on, where you can kind of capitalize on that and yet... and then combine that with the sort of local knowledge of a great diversity of socioeconomic circumstances. But of course, innovation also comes from working sometimes at the edges, right? So I think the key is collaboration. I really do. You know, where you can kind of combine the best of both the North and the South into something that, you know, that requires problem solving.
Yeah, definitely. What do you think the emerging trends are that people aren't talking about yet?
That aren't talking about
it? Yeah, they're not talking about them yet.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I suppose people are talking about driverless cars. They're talking about drones.
Is there anything that you've been, like, in your work that you've kind of gone, wow, this is the first time, you know, I've read about this, or, you know, I'm going to be writing about this, or, I mean, I think a lot of your work on a global scale, people aren't talking about necessarily the socioeconomic kind of factor. I mean, to a certain extent, but I think it's very relevant.
Sure.
Yeah. And using technology as a tool to enable that rather than just talking about the tech. Yeah.
I know that's clearer to me now. And thank you. I do think that there's something to be, I think there's an interesting area of research around space and what happens to places and to spaces. In that interface between human agency and technological innovation. I don't think we're talking about that enough. And yet these things are so critical. You know, how we experience the city has just got such a big impact on our well-being and our productivity. So that's the one thing. The other thing that some of my students have been working on more than I have, and I think this is quite critical, is how technologies can become part of the kind of mobility sort of equation. So, for example, in South African cities, there's great disillusionment with the kind of post-apartheid city. There's a great sense that we failed as urban planners. We haven't managed to create more inclusive and livable cities. I mean, there's a great sense of unease about that. And what a lot of us are saying in the urban planning space is that, you know, we can try and restructure the city away from the kind of old segregated models from the apartheid days. You know, we can do what we can, but actually perhaps what we should focus on more is enabling people to be more mobile so that there's just a greater fluidity, you know, so that people don't have to sort of travel. I mean, I know of people who travel for 2 hours, 3 hours each day, who spend 40% of their disposable incomes on transportation. And that shouldn't, you know, that shouldn't be necessary. So I think a really interesting part of research or future research could be around, you know, how do digital technologies, how can they become an extension of kind of mobility or transportation infrastructures so that people just have an easier time of it? You know, I had a student recently work on the paratransit sector. So these are small minibus vehicles that are used as sort of little buses. We call them minibus taxis. In East Africa, they're called matatus. You know, and they essentially emerged as a kind of informal response to the lack of transportation options, specifically for Black South Africans who were living in townships on the edges of the cities. And now that it's just become a big industry, I mean, the minibus taxi industry is massive. And what my student worked on is he was trying to understand, I mean, the big complaint about minibus taxis is that they're dangerous, that they're very effective in getting you from A to B because they, you know, race like maniacs. But they, you know, that works. But they also, you know, they kind of tend to be on demand. So if you get into a minibus taxi at a place and it's not full yet, not all the commuters are on board yet, it won't leave until it's full, you know. So that's not very efficient if you have to be there somewhere at this particular place. Sorry, I'm digressing again. But what my student Christian found is that, you know, there are ways in which you can use digital technologies, mobile phones and apps to maybe enable a more efficient minibus taxi system. So to me, that's exciting, you know, because you're talking about, harnessing the power of technology to solve an infrastructure problem that manifests socially and socioeconomically.
Oh, that's really interesting. Well, I just have one last question, which is, how can people connect with you?
Oh, right. So I could go through all my social media. No, so I'm at the University of Cape Town, and I'm in the School of Architecture Planning and Geomatics. And if you Google me, you'll find I do have an academia.edu page with all my contact details on it. And
you're on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter. I don't use Twitter very often, which is a great embarrassment given that I work in the space. But yes, I am on Twitter. I am on Facebook. I'm on Instagram, you know, but Instagram, yeah, I wouldn't recommend you look at my Instagram pictures. They're very boring, very boring cityscapes, unless it's your thing, you know. But yeah, I am on Twitter, and I do use Twitter now and again, but clearly not as much as I should.
Cool. Awesome. Well, yeah, I'll put links to your page and stuff on
your... Yeah, I mean, the academia.edu page is probably the best one.
Well, yeah, thanks so much. And yeah, we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Zoe, for the opportunity.
No worries. See you later.
See you later. Bye.
The Smart Community Podcast is brought to you by My Smart Community. If you're looking for support in podcast strategy and production, workshop design and facilitation, or communication and media advisory, get in touch. Email hello@mysmart.community or head to www.mysmart.community.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.